Welcome to Artificially Intelligent Marketing, a weekly podcast where we stay on top of the latest trends, tips, and tools in the world of marketing AI, helping you get the best results from your marketing efforts. Now let's join our hosts, Paul Avery and Martin Broadhurst.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 43 of Artificially Intelligent Marketing. It's also kind of our birthday today. In fact, our birthday was a week or two ago. So if you've been a listener since the start, you've had to put up with Martin and I talking nonsense about AI and marketing in your ear for the last year. And we really appreciate your time. I'm joined by said Martin Broadhurst, as always. How are you, Martin? Now the podcast is a year old.
A lot has happened in that time as well, hasn't it? It's developed at quite a pace, this AI space that we cover. I don't think I would have thought some of the innovations that we've seen would have emerged in quite the speed that they have done.
Yeah, it is. We've been riding that exponential curve as we've been trying to cover the news items as they've come out. And there's elements now to how fast it all jumps forward that we're almost taking for granted a bit. It's like Sora and its amazing video. This is the one that sticks in my mind most recently. And how quickly as humans we came to fixate on the very minor sort of errors that it makes. Maybe they're not so minor, but compared to what it can actually do, why aren't we like, what? How can it even do that? But there you go. We were living this week, weren't we, Martin? Because we were on tour.
We were delivering an AI workshop for a global marketing team, getting them up to speed on what the latest technology can do, what it can't do, and helping them get stuck into the tools with a real practical hands-on workshop. And I must say, that was brilliant. Some of the creative uses of AI for a campaign creation within, what was it, 50 minutes or so? It was amazing.
Yeah, I always come away from the workshops we run, Martin, hoping that the people we're working with are inspired to more practically grab hold of the AI tools and use them in their everyday. But those creative ideas they're coming up with, they inspire me when I get back to the office for the ideas that I'm hoping to implement. And as you said, really practically exploring how you can go from usually a fictitious product launch idea to a campaign theme, imagery, a launch plan, and all the other materials, of course, that we saw produced by the team this week was amazing. We had songs produced by Copilot with Suno. Like, it is amazing what you can do in a short time. And yeah, it was great fun. And if you're listening to this podcast and thinking, oh, I really love for Martin and Paul to come in and help my team figure out how we can actually make AI a useful part of our tech stack, then get in touch with us and we will gladly help. Because I think one of the things that we really saw this week was how just spending a little bit of time as a team to actually play with the tools can really help you make quite a big leap forward. Speaking of leaps forward, Martin, should we leap forward into the first story of the week?
Beautiful segue, Paul. Expertly done.
You wouldn't think I was jet lagged after we spent 30 hours in the States this week, would you? But no, I'm bang on it. Let's get into that first story.
First up is 11 Labs, one of the tools that people were using in their creative workshop outputs. Neatly done as well, it, I must say. So 11 Labs have moved from AI voice synthesis into the realms of AI created sound effects. So it's a whole new way for creators to use AI-generated audio within their podcasts, within their video production, within their music production, scripts, you name it. You can now do it within 11 Labs. How it works is the model was trained on a vast data set of real-world sounds, which were meticulously labeled and described by some data labelers. And all of this training has gone in really to help the model replicate these noises. And it's available in an early stage access account, which I've got access to. And you had a play with it alongside me while we were traveling. Ostensibly, it should be able to create everything from atmospheric sounds to weather phenomena, noises like hammers hitting nails and things like that. But I think early uses, certainly my experience with it straight off the bat alongside the sound effects that you asked me to put into it were that it is limited in some areas. And I've read some reviews and online discussion saying that, yeah, it's okay. It's a good first stab. You know, this is the first generation of this model, so it's only going to get better from here. But there are definitely some things that it struggles with. In my initial experiments, I found that it is quite good with things like thunderstorm noise effects or birdsong in the countryside. But where it really struggles is electronic sounds. It didn't seem to get any of those right. For instance, I tried to get it to recreate certain sound effects that one might hear in a video game, but it made kind of weird screeching noises. And if you try and do something a bit abstract, then it really goes awry, doesn't it, Paul?
You know me, I love to try and break these tools instant that we get hold of them. And certainly a dog playing a harmonica didn't quite work out as I was hoping it to. The car engine sound that you came up with, a car engine beating like a heartbeat, was kind of okay, but really not very usable. So yeah, if you want to get a bit crazy and do some interesting things, it fell apart quite quickly, didn't it? But if you're asking for real use case sounds that you would genuinely want to use, like a cowbell ringing or something, then it's performs a little bit better, but still with space to grow into a real production capable tool. Is that a fair description, Martin?
Yeah, very much so. I asked it for blackbirds singing in the English countryside, and it gives you 5 outputs when it creates it, so it doesn't just give you one version. And some of them sounded a little bit electronic. They sounded very synthetic. They had an element to that. On another example, I asked it to create the sound of a Ferrari sports car engine starting up. And that was interesting. They did sound good when they started up. They were all quite different. And I think if you were a petrol head, you'd be going, it's not a Ferrari Enzo or whatever. I'm not a petrol head, right? So I don't know the models. But if you were, you would pick it apart quite comfortably, I think. But they did sound pretty good. I asked it to do thunderstorms recorded from inside a tin roof shelter. That was odd because the first two that it created were just like a screech, like it just had failed. The generation had just not completed the task at all. But then the subsequent sounds that it created were pretty good.
So I think if you're listening to this and you're a podcast creator, you know, agency side or client side, or you're looking to create sound effects for videos, it's worth probably having a play with this, but just manage your expectations in terms of what you're going to get out of it, and keep an eye on the technology as it emerges. This is one to probably keep an eye on rather than to wrap straight into your production stack.
Yeah, and I think 11 Labs would probably echo that caution, right? Play around with it, test it, give them feedback, but don't go using this as your default sound effect library on day one.
Makes sense. Well, it's good for us to know these things are emerging. And I think, again, when you're in marketing, understanding the tools that are emerging and evolving, because this is, as we say, 1,000 times per day, per workshop, this is as bad as these tools will ever be. And now this gives you an indication of something you probably could wrap into your production stack in 3 or maybe 6 months' time as these tools improve. Good stuff. Speaking of tools improving, Midjourney had a really interesting announcement this week. So Midjourney is the AI-driven image generator. It's probably best in class for the quality of images produced, especially when it comes to photorealism. And this week, they launched a new feature that allows users to maintain consistency in character appearance across multiple images. So for most people playing with these tools, this has been a really big ask. If you want to create storyboards, or you want to create like a graphic novel, the inability to control character consistency, there are ways around it using things like seed values, but it doesn't work that well on average. So this is a big leap forward, I think, in terms of being able to give us as creators across a wide range of fields, marketing being one of them, control over character consistency between images. The way it works is you're going to use a specific type of tag in Midjourney. So people who are familiar with Midjourney will be used to using dash dash and then some information to control different aspects of the image. In this case, it's dash dash CREF and then followed by a URL to an image of that character. So in other words, you basically say, pay attention to this image, which contains this character to drive the consistency. Then you can use a separate tag called the CW tag, so dash dash CW, which is a numerical value from 0 to 100, which basically is like a weighting variable in terms of how closely should your new image resemble the character that you're trying to create. So it works best when those characters have been originally created in Midjourney. So you go in Midjourney, create a character, and then that's the image that you use as the source image for maintaining the character. It can work with images from outside Midjourney. It just doesn't tend to work as well. There's obviously going to be some ethical and copyright concerns here, Martin, in terms of using characters-based images to feed into these tools. What do you think is... do you think this is going to be a big issue?
Well, we've said before that Midjourney is one of the tools where you can create images from copyrighted characters, which OpenAI might say, absolutely not, we're not doing it. Now that we can do that with consistency as well, I can see it being open to abuse. But again, with any of these things, I like to think that we're speaking to an audience of reputable marketers that will be paying attention to these kinds of details. And therefore, you probably shouldn't come unstuck. You know, don't go taking photos of Joe Biden and sticking them in Midjourney and getting them to create photos endorsing your company, right? Try not to do that. Otherwise, I think, you know, for the most part, you'll probably be fine.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think for marketers, hopefully we know the frameworks we need to operate it within. But I suspect there will be bad actors out there that misuse this. So I think as consumers, we have to be ready for what the outcomes of that might be. Obviously, it's much, much better at using consistent characters that Midjourney itself has created. But Midjourney will also give you a half-decent image of Joe Biden. So I don't know where that leaves us. It's if you want to have a play with it, it is available via Midjourney's version 6, which is in beta. So if you are on the Discord, you can actually use this today. At some point in the near future, Midjourney will be moving out of Discord and into a web-based interface. Hooray! Because for most of us marketers, we don't have Discord accounts. We're not in Discord day in, day out. It's a bit of a clunky user experience. And as I understand it, at this point, it's still power users that are allowed to use the website version. People who've generated 10, 20,000 images in Midjourney. But hopefully that testing period will be over soon and more marketers can get their hands on the tool and then have a play with maintaining consistent characters. On to our next story, and it's a big regulation story. Martin, tell us about the EU's AI Act this week.
We've followed this one from the start, haven't we? And we've been giving updates as it's progressed through each of the legislative stages. And this week, on March 13th, so a couple of days ago, the European Parliament has passed the world's first comprehensive AI regulation. So the legislation aims to address the risks associated with AI technologies and promotes what they're calling a more human-centric approach to AI development and use. The core of this is around that risk level that it presents to the users. So it introduces a framework that categorizes AI products based on their risk level, applying varying degrees of scrutiny to ensure that the deployment of the technology is not going to be used for something that could inadvertently cause harm or be used maliciously. So you can think of this as being like an insurance policy. If we think about a specific use case, if you were using artificial intelligence to say whether somebody was eligible or not for a type of insurance, health insurance, life insurance, what have you. If the AI was automatically saying approved or denied, that's actually a high risk categorization because it could have a real detrimental impact. All of the bias that's in the model, and the model will have some bias in it. This is just inherent within AI systems. Could end up having detrimental outcomes for the human. So what organizations have to do is assess the level of harm. If, for instance, you're an AI company helping people write better subject lines for their email tools, it seems unlikely that this is a high-risk application for AI. So you've probably got a low-risk categorization, you need to be less concerned. But if you're deploying this in some sort of process where there is potential to cause harm, yeah, definitely one that you want to keep an eye on. In terms of on the global front, this is a world first. And much like the EU's GDPR set the tone for other regulators around the world to think about how we use data, I think this is going to be a kind of scaffold upon which other regulators hang their own legislation from. They'll use that as the basis for their own legislation around the world. There was some discussion around copyright provisions. Obviously, copyright has been a major talking point when it comes to AI, because generative AI in particular has caused lots of copyright holders to say, hey, you're scraping our content. This, I'm not entirely sure that they've fully resolved that, other than saying that you have to make available the information that is in your training data. And that is going to be a bone of contention going forward, I dare say.
Yeah, definitely for those commercial companies where that, you know, when OpenAI became, as Elon Musk would have them, rebranded as closed AI and not really giving too much detail about how the models are trained and how the models work. Yeah, I mean, I guess if I think through what the wider spread ramifications could be, is those in Europe could see that their access to some tools like ChatGPT, Copilot, might be paused for a short or perhaps longer period while OpenAI and whoever gets in line with those regulations. I think that will be quite interesting to see how that plays out.
Absolutely. We saw when ChatGPT was launched, there was pushback in Italy, and Italian users couldn't use ChatGPT for a short period of time. So there is precedent for this. I would expect that there's been enough dialogue between the leaders of the tech companies and the regulators to find some compromise. But we know that the EU doesn't back down when it gets the kind of smell of blood, or I don't know what the right phrase would be, but they don't give an inch, really. And tech companies have had to pay significant fines for GDPR breaches and things like that. So this is going to be the next battleground, I think.
So something important that I think we'll all have to keep an eye on there, Martin. Thank you for taking us through that. In the next story, we're going to talk very briefly about Claude 3 and the new models from Claude 3. We touched on this in the last episode. But until this week, in fact, I think it's like yesterday or the day before, you couldn't access the smallest model of Claude 3, which is called Haiku. And it's quite an interesting one because it's like super fast, super low latency, very cost effective, especially compared to other models. So to give you an example, it can process approximately 21,000 tokens per second, which is about 30 pages, which makes it about 3 times faster than competitors for the majority of workloads. And it's also extremely cheap. So to give you an example of this, it can analyze 400 Supreme Court cases for just $1. But of course, it's not at the same level as GPT-4 and Claude 3 Opus. So we're expecting that this will be mostly leveraged for behind the scenes, high bandwidth work, like summarizing lots of call transcripts for sentiment analysis and those types of things, rather than content creation or brainstorming, ideation, logical data processing. It's a bit more of a behind the scenes sort of carry out all of the work. But what we love about it, Martin, is it's got image and vision capabilities, right? Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is the really interesting thing, because you mentioned it can analyze 400 Supreme Court cases for $1. Well, it can also process 2,000 500 images for just a dollar. That's an incredible amount of image processing. Now, what can you do with that? Well, you can turn data from a photo into structured text data because it can do the extraction and then put that into digitized tabulated data. So if you've got lots of handwritten forms that have been given to your company, maybe you've got an archive of data that you need digitizing. Now you can scan all of those sheets, run them through this model and get all of the text extract neatly formulated. You could pass it out in JSON files, put it into CSV or tabulated data, however you want it formatted, it could do it for you. And it's incredibly cheap.
Yeah, I think it's super interesting. I can definitely imagine taking screen grabs of software routinely while a user uses it and then trying to use that to create documentation about how that software works for creating things like software manuals. And yeah, I think you're right. I think it's, again, creativity and imagination in terms of, now I have this capability at low latency and low cost. What can I do now, especially using those vision capabilities that I couldn't do before? Because certainly if you use, for example, like I talk a lot about Magi on the podcast, that has the vision capabilities of Gemini and ChatGPT built into it. But the cost of using those tools is more than just using text alone, because it costs more to use those APIs. So to have access to a vision tool at low cost, I think that really does open up some interesting capabilities.
I think the important thing for users when it comes to Haiku is to remember that this isn't about the creative outputs or the reasoning abilities. This is the workhorse, as you identified. This is about executing tasks, formatting data, extracting data, summarization. It's those kinds of applications where this comes into its own.
Completely agree. So next story, there's a interesting quote from Sam Altman doing the rounds on the socials at the moment, originally uncovered, or at least to us, by Paul Reitzer and Mike Caput, from Sam Altman. Tell us about this story, Martin.
In an interview recently, Sam Altman said that artificial general intelligence will take over 95% of tasks currently done by marketing agencies, strategists, and creative professionals. They said that the integration of AI into marketing, it's already happening, and generative AI is taking on more and more of these tasks within the industry. So that is the next frontier. As soon as we get to AGI, the marketing industry needs to watch out. Now, in terms of the time frame for that, Sam was saying approximately 5 years. So if you're a marketing agency owner, Paul, I don't know if you know any, you might have to pay attention. This is going to be a bit disruptive, according to Sam. What do you think?
Yeah, so I think this is really interesting. But after I digested it for a while, I really thought about, well, this is probably true of like most of knowledge work. So you could probably swap out marketing agency for accounting, consultancy, a huge amount of other industries. I think what makes the marketing part interesting is the creative aspects, right? Running creative campaigns, analyzing the data, and then improving those, which is somewhere that I think AI can help a lot. But like creative production is hard. We've talked about the limitations of the current tool set a lot already. So I think that's where I almost, for good or ill, see marketing as quite a high bar, because it's content creation, it's strategy, it's data analysis, it's creative outputs, it's empathy and customer understanding. And I think if AI can do a lot of those things, it can probably do a lot of jobs. The other thing is the references here in terms of AGI, well, by definition, AGI can do lots of things that humans can do. So I think we're still on that timeline towards AGI. When we hit AGI, the world's going to be very, very different place to what it is now. And I think, assuming this is possible, come on to that in a minute, but assuming this is possible, our economy has to be fundamentally rethought in terms of, what do humans do with their time? How do we have purpose? How do we deliver value? How does the economy work from a monetary perspective? Like, how do we all have money to live? Do we live in a world where everybody's got a robot that helps them and like we're all doing fantastic pursuits and it's kind of like Star Trek? Or is it going to be more like, what's that movie? Is it Wall-E? Is that the character where all of the humans basically become extremely overweight and live in these like portable pods where they don't really do anything for themselves anymore because the computers can do it all? That would be the more dystopian view potentially. But all of this is dependent on the current tech architectures that we have, getting us to an AI that can basically do most, if not all, things that humans can do better than a human. And I'm just stuck on that. Like, I feel the exponential curve we're on mine. I really do. So it feels plausible. But I also know that there have been other AI areas of enthusiasm followed by AI winters where we hit a barrier that we couldn't get through. And we'll talk about some other awesome stuff that Meta and other companies are doing at the moment. But this kind of assumes that the current paradigms of models that we're creating will get us there. And they may not. So we just don't know. Do you have a perspective on this?
I think it's interesting to see where it's currently at. And we saw this in the workshop this week. If you get a team of humans and give them the AI tools, the speed at which that creative development, that iteration, that first draft, a lot of work can be done in a very short window of time. I think some of the copywriting that was done in some of the examples that we saw with the team we were working with this week, it was work that was done in about 8 minutes that was really quite impressive. Not the finished article, but really impressive. And that was many humans working with AI as a tool to assist them. I think the notion of completely, you know, 95% of the tasks, that seems high to me. In 5 years' time, 95% of tasks being done by AI does seem high, but then pace of change, and when you break down what some of the tasks that we do, whether it's project management, I'm thinking, you know, well, okay, the AI will get better at copywriting, it will get better at creative development and concepts for design or from video. And then thinking in 5 years' time, crikey, a lot has changed in 1 year, never mind five times. So we will definitely be further along. Then which bits of the marketing agency tasks and task workload isn't done by AI? I find myself thinking, well, actually, maybe he's right. I swing back and forth. AGI as a term, I struggle with, because exactly what you've said, we've had these AI predictions in the past followed by AI winters where you're looking for the next breakthrough that's going to take us into the next epoch of AI activity. Will we get at the current level of AI with LLMs and existing model architectures? Will that replace marketing agencies? It's a big ask. I'm not going to profess to have the answer.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that these predictions sometimes lack is we may have the technical capabilities to do so, but there are a lot of things in that have to happen to make this possible, right? So even what we're seeing in the work that we're doing, there's the technical capabilities of the AI, but then there's also the training of the people to use it. There's also the willingness to change, right? Which some humans in general are pretty good at change, in terms of we're adaptable, but most humans on the micro level resist change. So how do you manage that change management aspect? Then how do the, you know, governments of the world, regulators, how do they manage the emergence of these tools because of the disruption it will bring to our way of life and the economy? So again, we may be technically able to do some of this stuff, but to my understanding, humans will have to choose to implement it. And will they? ? How will they implement it? And how easy will that be? And how long will it take? So I just look at all those different streams of things that have to happen. And I'm not saying that this isn't where we're going to be. I just think it's probably more complex than can we technically do it with the computing power and architectures we have.
Yeah, I've no doubt that in 5 years' time, there will be kind of marketing agency as a service subscription style AI powered tools available, where people have cobbled together a bunch of different AI agents and they can execute very specific things. Like you might want it to come up with a campaign concept and then give you a kind of channel strategy for some advertising. It will design you a landing page and you can press deploy and you will get a campaign designed, copywritten, pushed out with some data capture forms and landing pages and integrations into Meta and all of the other advertising platforms. And that's a good chunk of what a digital marketing agency might do for somebody. But it's not everything. But if you're a smaller business, that might be perfect for what you need. If you're looking for a global omni-channel product launch and brand activation, do I think an AI is capable of doing all of that with all of the human logistics and coordination and that's required? No.
I think it's, I love the fact that you just brought that up, because if just thinking in that and taking it through to a more like extreme logical conclusion, if everybody has access to this tool, then everybody can use that marketing in a box tool that you described. Well, that's the new bar, that's new table stakes. And in the battle for human attention, and we've talked about this in previous workshops and podcasts about the deluge of rubbish content that ChatGPT and other large language models could enable. And being able to churn out a load of rubbish content is useful for a short period, but we're already seeing that Google is now starting to penalize those sites that it feels have added lots of content quickly and has a good feeling that that content is AI generated for SEO and to appease search engines, not to provide value to humans. And so we're going to see, if everybody's got access to these tools, that's now the lowest common denominator. And how do you go above that? Well, maybe there's other tools that you pay more money for. But I think that, again, that's where humans will give you that creative competitive edge. So these tools in hands of absolute domain experts are going to get better results than these tools in the hands of non-domain experts. And so all it does is just push the bar up for everyone. And we get a good insight into this in the life sciences. And, we worked in the life sciences this week. I know it's not an area you haven't worked as much in, but hopefully it was quite interesting to see just how incapable some of the tools are in some niche domains, right? We did some image generation work, trying to produce scientifically accurate images, and all of the tools completely suck at it. Like, you can't use Midjourney or any other tool for any type of image production work in the life sciences outside of stock photos of people in laboratories, or maybe some abstract images that you think are like interesting and beautiful, but that you're not claiming are scientifically accurate in any way. And to be quite honest, ChatGPT and other tools, they struggle at written content creation as well, because they just don't have the deep domain expertise that a subject matter expert has, either within a team like mine, where we've got a bunch of PhD level science writers, and certainly within life science businesses as a whole, in terms of all of the subject matter experts that they have and the domain knowledge on the cutting edge that these tools don't have. And I see that as a bit of a prelude to this, which is, like you say, it pulls the average up, but there's going to be a load of use cases where it's not fit for purpose and it will get better over time. But I think that will take some time. Let's move into our next story then, which is about IBM announcing layoffs in its communications and marketing divisions, probably somewhat related to the conversation we were just having, Martin. And this comes hot off of the press of the Klarna examples that we talked about in the previous podcast, where they were able to replace human customer service reps with AI-driven chatbots to boost profit margins. So IBM has initiated layoffs within its communications and marketing staff, affecting a low single-digit performance of its a percentage of its global workforce. The move is part of a broader workforce rebalancing effort announced earlier in the year during the company's fourth quarter earnings, where IBM aims to maintain its employment levels through 2024 by focusing on areas of high demand among its clients, such as AI and hybrid cloud technologies. So this is quite interesting, because these are Marcom's jobs that are going, and they follow a recent announcement from IBM about the impact of AI on the workforce. So this makes this a particularly pertinent story for us to be covering, doesn't it, Martin?
Yeah, and it comes hot off the tail of them announcing a hiring pause for approximately 7,800 positions, which they say are potentially replaceable by AI technology. So these are predominantly back office jobs, and this was announced late last year. And at the time we discussed this on the podcast, and now we're starting to see this come to fruition. And I think considering Sam Altman's story and the reporting of 95% of Marcom's agency jobs or tasks being effectively done by AI, well, IBM are trying to turn that into a reality with their internal team. They are still investing, but they're looking to invest in their teams that are working on AI technologies, on their cloud technologies. So Watson X Development Studio is aiming to train companies in building and releasing machine learning models. This is where they're putting their focus. And I suspect that huge amounts of the work that was previously done by their global Marcoms team will still get done in-house, but it will be done by Watson.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, we have the story from last week, right, about Klarna's customer service delivery, where we don't have any data outside of a small amount of information from the company. And they have obviously been questions that have been levied at the company. And at least as time of this recording, I don't know if you know different, Martin, but from what I've seen so far, they haven't really been able to respond to a lot of those questions. And it's not that we're not saying that that use case wasn't real, but it hasn't. We haven't had the ability to really scrutinize it. And we were reading a report on the plane, weren't we? We were flying over to the US, questioning the real world impact of AI and where are all the applications that massively boost efficiency and effectiveness and drive shareholder value and increase profits and go to the bottom line and all that. And they are kind of few and far between in terms of written case studies. But I hold that in tension with the businesses that I know that are getting the 10, 20, 30% productivity and efficiency gains using the tools. So I still think we're in the middle of trying to see the productivity gains and efficiency gains that these tools really allow. But when we see moves like this by IBM, we have to assume that just because they're not reporting what they are seeing them, and that gives them the confidence to make these infrastructure changes.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the report from The Information. It was on The Information that they said big cloud providers, so sales teams at the likes of Google Cloud, Amazon AWS, are all saying to dampen expectations of sales of generative AI integrations and services. And that's predominantly through clients' hesitance to implement them in customer-facing applications, driven by inaccuracy and hallucinations. That seems to be the big issue for people at the moment. And that's completely understandable. Even with RAG-based systems, I've seen reports saying that RAG-based integrations are 70 or 80% accurate, but 70 or 80% accurate still leaves a lot of room for improvement if you're getting a 20 or 30% error rate or just lacking in the right bit of detail when responding to customers. That's not going to be production ready. So yeah, I think we're going to see more and more applications for generative AI in the back office, for internal processes, for alleviating all of those jobs in an organization where it's somebody taking data from this place to another place and things like that. And this takes us back to the reason why the Haiku API deployment is so interesting.
I agree. So to add further complexity to this discussion in terms of how powerful is AI? What can it do? Is it really adding productivity gains? Probably because of some of these changes we're seeing within businesses, but how fast will we get to a position where it's really taking a huge amount of work away from humans? Meta's had a bit of a leap, supposedly, in their development of their AI tools, haven't they, Martin?
This is very much on the engineering side of things. On the Meta engineering team blog, they announced some massive investment, basically, and the future of their technology stack for developing and rolling out AI models that we can all use in the future. I'm going to try to avoid getting too into the detail on this, but at its core, what they're saying is that they are going to deploy a new range of AI clusters within their data centers. So the infrastructure is powered by 24,576 NVIDIA Tensor Core H100 GPUs. Now, they are the most cutting edge chips for AI processing available on the market, and they're a significant upgrade on what they've been using to date. I think when you start to look at the numbers around this, you start to see how seriously these organizations, big tech, are taking AI development, research, and deployment. So they're looking to expand the H100 GPU count by an additional 350,000 units. Okay. So that's kind of abstract. You hear that and you go, okay, they're investing in a lot of chipsets, 350,000 of them. Great. And they say they're aiming to have a total compute power equivalent to 600,000 of these units by the end of 2024. So it's massive expansion of compute power. Just to put this into an investment perspective, the book price for a H100 GPU is between £30,000 and £35,000 per GPU, which ballparks, you know, plus or minus a billion, that's a £10 billion investment in these chipsets. And I'm sure the commercial agreement is very different from me walking into PC World and asking for a H100 chip. I'm sure they've got a slightly different setup with NVIDIA, but it goes to show that they aren't really backing up their research team with some real GPU horsepower.
It's pretty cool. The Yann LeCun, who's head of all of this over at Meta, has been doing the rounds on a few podcasts recently and re-referencing the IJEPA models that we've covered previously on the podcast. So JEPA stands for Joint Embedding Predictive Architecture, where, again, this probably stretches into the machine learning details and probably beyond the expertise, certainly of me and potentially both of us. But it's about providing AI with the opportunity to learn in different ways from how large language models have learned from the data they've been fed so far, in a sort of passive mechanism of having an AI learn about the world around it a little bit like a two-year-old would, just by observing what's going on. One assumes that's going to take massive computing power. And so when you look at these investments from Meta, this isn't just a power that, you know, Llama 3. This is because they have these other architectures and these other mechanisms of getting us to artificial general intelligence that they want to explore and need massive computing power to enable. So when we're talking about AGI in 5 years and all the things that, all the human jobs that it could potentially replace, as Sam Altman said, and whether or not we've got the architectures to do that, Yann LeCun is one of the people who doesn't believe we have the architectures to do that, but at the same time is part of a Meta team that's spending £10 billion on all of this compute power to discover those architectures and test them and train them. And of course, already having some interesting ideas on what those architectures should be. And we've talked about them on the podcast as well. We've got their vision segmentation model that's able to detect things in images, which is probably either that technology or similar technology that's underpinning a lot of the vision capabilities that we're seeing at the moment. Their audio translation capabilities are more powerful than any of the tools that I've seen commercially available so far when you look at the demo videos. And this investment will just go to further fuel all of that stuff.
You mentioned Yann LeCun there and him doing the media rounds recently, and he's really not keen on the term AGI, which we've talked about on the podcast today, but if you hear him talk about it, it's not a specific phrase that he likes. He prefers to use a different terminology. But if you read the engineering blog that Meta have put out, they actually have a graphic that talks explicitly about this new cluster model and this major new investment driving directly through to AGI. They have a diagram that features AGI at the end of it, which, funnily enough, takes a pathway through Llama 3.
I bet it does. Well, if they want to get there, They may need to be supported by tools like Devin, which was released this week, which is, if the hype is to be believed, Martin, the world's first fully autonomous AI software engineer. So it's been developed by a company called Cognition in the US, and it's designed to work autonomously with its own code editor, command line, and browser, supposedly being able to handle complex software engineering tasks. So this kind of forms an early indication of what a developer type AI agent would be in terms of taking multiple steps in software development. So it can plan and execute intricate engineering projects. It can make thousands of decisions, and it's equipped with different developer tools. It can collaborate with users, and it can also provide real-time progress reports and accept feedback from the users. So it's kind of interesting, but there's a but. And I think the but is, it's kind of a cool leap forward. But and best way that we can kind of put this in some context. So on a particular coding benchmark, so the SWE bench coding benchmark, Devin resolved nearly 14% of issues end to end, which is better than the previous state of the art, which I think is probably GPT-4, which was about 2%. So the move from 2% to 14% is significant, but 14% is still not that large. The other thing that's worth noting is that the previous state of the art was models that were being assisted by humans. So, for example, being told exactly which files to edit, whereas Devin was able to do this unassisted. So it's quite a big leap forward, but obviously there's quite a lot of space to improve. I saw Ethan Mollick has got access to this already, Martin, and he's posted on LinkedIn about some of his experience with it. And that whilst it still has quite a long way to go, it's a good early indication of what agentic capabilities might be in these types of tools. Did you see this Devin news?
The videos for it are really good. If you look on the blog from the company, they've got a series of 1 or 2 minute videos showcasing some specific examples of the tool in action. And while this isn't going to build you a really complex piece of software end to end and deploy it, it will do small tasks more completely than anything I've seen from any other tool. One example was somebody shared a link to a blog post about how to create the Stable Diffusion model that can do the text hidden within the image. I can't remember what that tool is. The developer, she shared a link to that blog post and said, this article has some code in it to get this thing working. Can you create a tool that uses it? And that's it. So shares a URL, inputs the blog, and then it goes off, creates a plan of the steps that it needs to execute, and then executes each one of those steps successfully, and then delivers back to her some sample images that it has just created with the software that it's just written. Now, that's very cool. It isn't going to be the whole front end at this stage. It's like it said in the report, just shy of 14% of issues were resolved end to end. So there's still a long way to go. But it's a significant leap from where we were.
Yeah, I remember when we were playing with AutoGPT, Martin, and us and other people in our network were just struggling to get it to work, and it's kind of disappeared. Nobody really talks about it anymore. And that's because I think mostly it didn't work very well. This is kind of an improvement on AutoGPT.
It is. And there is a certain hype around this at the moment, which feels somewhat similar to the hype around AutoGPT. And I remember when AutoGPT came out, we were both somewhat skeptical. We couldn't get it to do very many interesting things, while at the same time, AI influencers on the Twitter sphere, as on the LinkedIns, were saying that it can do all of these amazing things, and you know, jobs are no longer required, and that transpired to be inaccurate. Whereas this does feel like a genuine leap, and for a day one model, I'm looking at it going, okay, if I'm a software developer, I can see this having some very interesting use cases.
Yeah, I think it's something for us to keep an eye on. I think it will be overhyped, but it is still, I do still also think it's an incremental move forward. Another thing that's likely to get overhyped is our last story this week, Martin. We'll talk about this one briefly, is the collaboration between Figure and OpenAI.
Yeah, the Figure company, which creates humanoid robots, has released a video where they've got their humanoid robot integrated with, it must be GPT-4 Vision, and they've got a person communicating with the robot, asking it questions and asking it about what it sees, and the robot responds and then executes some tasks, and it's just a more fully rounded version of what a robot human robot interaction might look like. However, there were some issues with it, weren't there?
Yeah, the lag is noticeable. So if you're a listener, find this video on YouTube. It's probably very easy to be found because I think it's been well shared as well on all the socials. But in essence, person walks up and asks he's hungry, and the robot hands him an apple, and all of the movements are very well handled. The robot also does some cleaning up and some other things. But there is a noticeable lag between asking the question and then the robot responding that you can imagine, if that was a real life interaction, would soon drive you absolutely crazy. It's like having a human who's really not that bothered about what you've got to say, not really paying attention to you, and only gets back to you after thinking for 15 to 20 seconds, which is annoying. Obviously, the latency of these things will drop down. And when I saw this, Martin, I couldn't help but think, I think when you're on an exponential curve, we're like, it's easy to say, oh, what's the day AGI will come out? Like, it just won't be like that. Like, one day we'll go, oh, crumbs. Has anybody taken a step back from this and gone, 2 years ago, we didn't have anything like this? But I do think this will be another one of those moments that for those of us that end up old enough to remember will be like, you know, all those robots that are working in the factories or helping cleaning up in the house. I remember when I saw the video of the first realistic conversation between a human and a robot, which worked quite well, but had some problems. And I think that's probably where this will end up. It will be one of those first steps along the road. So clearly has some problems, but I think it's a measure of really rapid progress that happens when large language models are combined with significant improvements in robotics.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where we head with this tech, because I like the idea of a robot cleaner.
Absolutely. My office could definitely do with a robot cleaner. But right, I think we'll call it there, Martin. Thank you so much for your time, as always. And thank you to you, dear listener. If you find this valuable, you know what I'm going to say. I say it every week. Subscribe. Share it with your pals in the marketing land if you think that they will find value. We'll look forward to speaking with you next week. Martin, have a fab weekend, and I will speak to you soon.
See you later.
Thank you for listening to Artificially Intelligent Marketing. To stay on top of the latest trends, tips, and tools in the world of marketing AI, be sure to subscribe. We look forward to seeing you again next week.